Blog Talk Radio.
I hope we're all surviving tonight. Darlings, it's Mummy, Sybil Brunson, and I'm coming to you live right now on Come Now, Don't Sulk, part of the Here Be Monsters studio on Blog Talk Radio Network. We're here in our studios. Again, we're doing this all remotely as opposed to when we started. And I'm here with my wonderful, wonderful producer. We could never have done this show without her, Gwendolyn Holdenberry, who also is not only our producer and our mentor and our goddess from the Olympus, she's also our sponsor. Our sponsor, of course, tonight is daughtersofisis.com. That's daughtersofisis.com, all one word, the fragrant memories of our ancestors. And we're also brought to you by listeners just like you. Thank you. Before I do anything, I just want to reiterate, Gwendolyn Holdenberry is our producer and our sponsor and our founder of Here Be Monsters Studio. And I would just like to say, before I go any farther, that we all have so many things to be thankful for, and I am again thankful not only at Thanksgiving time, but as I am every Monday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, for having Gwendolyn come into my life years ago now, not 14 years ago like some other people on her other shows, but 3 years ago. We've been on the air for 3 years, and I just am so thankful that I have Gwendolyn Holdenberry not only as my producer and our sponsor, but as a great, great friend. Gwendolyn, I am so grateful for you. Thank you so much for this adventure that we've had.
Oh, you're quite welcome. It's been fun, hasn't it?
It has been, and it's been eventful. And you know what's funny for me is we've been doing this show, like, did we do that? Wait, is it longer than 3 years? I feel like we actually
know,
were doing this show before
Donald
Trump was president.
I can't remember, but I do know it hasn't been 14 years. It's been more like 11 years that I've had Here Be Monsters. But
okay.
It's weird. And we do have two callers. I'll bet we know who they are, too.
Already we have callers. Well, thank goodness for that. Why don't we invite them in? But I do want to just say that, folks at home, our sponsor is daughtersofisis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors. And they have a product line which you must check on your laptops right now, daughtersofisis.com. Go to their website. And before we get our callers in, I just want to ask Gwendolyn, who's also the founder of daughtersofisis.com and the head fragrantriologist and chemist there, what's a fragrance that we should be looking at right now on your website? What's a great fragrance that would you suggest for the, as November draws to a close and we're closing in on the Christmas season and the Hanukkah season and everything?
You know what? I'm going to suggest a really standard, one of our best sellers, Great Blend Money Mist. Bring the prosperity into your world, especially at the beginning of a holiday season when you can use extra coins in your pocket.
Uh-huh. That's great. And it's money, and it actually is a dollar sign, right?
It's a mist, and it says money, but its label is just a dollar sign. Yeah,
exactly. I wanted them to know what they're looking for. The label is adorable. It's a dollar sign, so don't be alarmed by that. And do you want to give us a hint about the recipe? Just like, what are some of the notes that are in it?
Well, it's very earthy. It's a dark aged patchouli with bay and clove and summer savory. And I use a CO2 coconut. That's the sweetness that people enjoy in it.
I love that in it, too. I especially love that. Yeah, wonderful. All right, well, folks, do check out daughtersofisis.com during our broadcast. And by the way, if you'd like to call in and be one of our callers, our number is 323-784-9639. That's 323-784-9639. Let's take our callers.
I'm opening them up now. Well, you know what I mean.
I do. Who are our callers tonight?
Well, you have Wayne Johnson here. And I'm sorry.
Wayne, how are you tonight?
Oh, so darling. I am just doing wonderful. And look, this, due to the fact this is the season that we want to give thanks, I want to give thanks like you towards Gwen, such a beautiful soul. And, you know, the pleasure of being on the radio with her twice, you know, every week for the most part.
Yes, because you become a member of our family on Monday night.
Absolutely.
And so I feel like Sundays, when you're on your show, the Sundays night show, is kind of the entree. And then if you stay around when all the other dinner guests have left, you get dessert on Monday night.
With a nice cappuccino to just taste.
Yes. Yeah, like a little a little after dinner drink, a cheese and cracker course, whatever.
There you go.
Yeah, lovely.
Yeah. Cheese and crackers. God, Frangelico and cream in the coffee.
All right. Well, anyway, so yes.
And who else is on our line right now?
Hi, it's Pamela.
Pamela, how are you? Speaking of food, audience,
how
could we talk about extended courses and, like, what's the dinner party that goes from one house to another?
It's like a traveling.
What's the term for it? Yeah, it's like that wonderful thing where it's sequential or whatever it is. It's like the dinner party that goes from one person's house to another. Speaking of talking about Sunday night and then Monday night, how could we talk about anything like that without our own Pamela? Pamela is our chef extraordinaire who talks about food on the air, and then people have been known to undress and masturbate as she talks about it.
Are you there?
I'm here. It's so lurid.
It's called the progressive dinner.
The progressive dinner.
Okay. Sorry, things just pop in my head, and I have to say them because I'll forget them. So.
Yeah, I love that you said it's a progressive dinner. The phone lines will light up now.
Oh,
Sybil Brunch is a damn commie. You know, why does she has to always make it political? A progressive, why can't it just be an all-American conservative dinner? Why does she always have to be a pinko? She's a damn commie and she knows it. She probably slept with Lenin and Trotsky and Stalin all in the same bed in a motel. She should have been blacklisted years ago. Folks, I'm going to just open the show right now with one brief statement. We could, especially in the last 48 hours, go into politics, go into headlines, go into one catastrophe after another. Literally one catastrophe after another. I mean, there's nothing innocent even on a basketball court right now. Poor LeBron James, you know, he punches a guy in the face, bloody. I mean, there's just no good news anywhere on any headline, and every single headline is loaded with racial stuff, with political stuff, with whatever. So I'm going to say that tonight we're going to resist all of that as much as we can, since Thanksgiving is literally
very good. I agree. Applaud.
Let's make some news up. Make it up.
Make up some news.
Well, I've been trying on Facebook. A friend of mine posted a Victorian postcard. A friend of mine posted a Victorian postcard of two children with a pumpkin and a turkey. And it's one of those old Victorian, like, happy Thanksgiving postcards from 1880. And I looked at it, and the turkey looks very angry, And the children look kind of strange, so I couldn't resist making up a story about this card. And immediately people glommed onto the how funny it was that I had made it out that the church, this was a series of Thanksgiving cards, and it was a series where two children go to a barnyard and select the turkey for mother, and the family comes and approves. And then the next card is that the children are playing tricks on the turkey. And then the final card is that the turkey turns on the children. And then the next card is that the turkey has killed both children. And it was like everybody thought that was fabulous. This Victorian card of these children and this enraged turkey. So I just think that it's kind of funny. And I'm not a vegetarian yet. I'm drifting that way, but I'm not yet. So I'm still a carnivore. But I do think it's funny when barnyard animals turn on their oppressors and their tormentors. I have a very black sense of humor in that sense. So that's what I did. So anyway, I'm going to throw the show to you three because I'm so grateful and thankful for you three being in my life. Again, back to
same
mother.
Here. Same here.
Our wonderful Gwendolyn, who is our den mother here, she opened this all up for all of us. So I'm grateful to her and the three and all three of you and anyone else who calls in too. So you three talk about Thanksgiving, and I'm just going to listen and put on weight.
Well,
what?
Pam, I say you started off because I think food and the art of the cuisine should be one of the topics tonight.
I agree.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Start running with it.
Oh, I'm too fat to run. I'm sorry.
And I'm too old, so what the hell?
I'm making the cranberry sauce for the family dinner this year, and I use cranberries, and I'm chopping up some fresh ginger to put in it and allspice. And I'm not going to use orange. I'm going to use the clementine rind.
Wow.
Clementine juice.
I just posted my cranberry recipe.
Oh, did you? What is yours?
I did. Mine is, it's very simple, actually, but it's just cranberries that you cook with some sugar and water and until they start to burst. And then you add, you know, the orange zest and the orange juice. And I use a lime because I think lime goes so well.
I love that. I've done that too. Lime is very interesting.
Oh. Yeah. Yes, lime zest with the lime juice. And I also put in either dried cherries or raisins as it simmers on the stove.
Love that. Love that.
I also use... some walnuts, but I chop them, but not, they're roughly chopped just to give some texture.
Right.
Because everything, when you think about Thanksgiving dinner, I mean, everything is just like mush, mashed potatoes, dressing, yams, you know, you need some texture, you know, something in there that, you know, so. I
well,
mean,
Pamela, wait, before you, Pamela, you know why Thanksgiving dinner is mostly mush. It's because the pilgrims had no teeth, and so they couldn't chew anything. So, I mean, their dental hygiene was appalling. So they had no teeth to chew anything. So anyway, go on with what you're saying.
And then I also use a Granny Smith apple.
Oh my God.
That I chop very finely. And only one. Because one bag of cranberries, one apple, and I peel it and chop it very finely because the Granny Smith apple has the pectin that is natural that will thicken your cranberry sauce.
Oh, yes.
So
nice.
And you don't even know what's in there when you chop it fine because it just kind of cooks in with the cranberries, but it releases that natural pectin, and then as it cooks and then cools, it just naturally thickens. So more of a sauce. It's more of a cranberry, you know, sauce, more compote sauce than a like a runny cranberry sauce.
Uh-huh. Have you ever been tempted to put? And I'm saying literally, like a sorceress, like a witch. Have you ever put a pinch of cinnamon and a pinch of nutmeg? Any of those other things?
A pinch of nutmeg I do, and I put that on the lollipop peel tonight. I do a pinch of nutmeg.
So that people don't even know it's in there, like the lime. The lime is just this whisper of like something.
Right.
The way Gwendolyn makes
her
fragrances, some of Gwendolyn's fragrances are, she tells the ingredients, but you'd never know it was there. Except
right. And the same thing, when you're tasting it, you're like, what is that? I know
exactly.
It's something because it's, and you just don't, you can't put your finger on it. And I said, well, you know, I got to start sharing my recipes because, you know, who else am I going to leave them to? So I might as well just start sharing them. So people can enjoy them after I'm long gone, because what's good is taking them to the grave. So
exactly.
So tomorrow I'm doing my secret. I call it my secret because I do little things that most people don't, to my mashed potatoes.
Wait one second, because Wayne, I want to interrupt here. Pamela, you said that your Thanksgiving dinner was last week. You said it was going to be a seafood-based Thanksgiving dinner. Okay, so I just want to refresh the audience's mind, because people that didn't tune in or have never tuned in, or anyone coming in tonight, this is not a traditional turkey dinner that we're listening to. This Pamela does this amazing dinner. So would you just say the menu again for everyone, because I think it's outrageously delicious.
Okay, so I'm going to do deviled eggs because I just love deviled eggs, and I love them on Thanksgiving.
I do too.
So I just do deviled eggs. But when I do my deviled eggs, I do them a couple of different ways. So half of them, my secret on one half of them is just a little bit of horseradish with the mixture of the yolks. Not enough that you can say, oh, my God, I hate horseradish, because people that hate horseradish will eat my deviled eggs if they have horseradish.
Nice.
Just enough to give it, and then I use the other one, the other half of the eggs, I'll do a little bit of Frank's hot sauce. Not enough to say, oh, my God, my mouth is burning, but enough to give that zing. And just, what is that kind of thing, you know? So that's my secret with my deviled eggs. And then we will have shrimp grilled on skewers wrapped in bacon. We will have seared scallops in white wine and garlic. We will have grilled, I bought 8-ounce lobster tails that will be grilled with a garlic butter. And we also will have some crab, and I'm going to do some saffron rice, pilaf, and some asparagus roasted with prosciutto and parm, and roasted broccoli, and a skillet cookie with homemade vanilla ice cream drizzled with salted caramel for dessert.
Man,
okay,
that's
I just split my trousers just now. I'm sitting here with my
I will be making my turkey dinner, but it's going to be a couple weeks later.
Great.
Well,
if I
do a turkey dinner like in a couple of weeks, but not for Christmas.
Not for Christmas. No, Christmas I usually do a crown roast, pork roast, or a crown beef roast.
Oh, God.
Uh-huh. And then I do a seafood scampi with crab and lobster and shrimp to serve with a twice-baked potato.
Nice. Well, Pam, I'm here in the Chesapeake Bay region. You know, basically grew up my whole life here. And, you know, our cuisine is very much seafood-based, too. But, you know, traditionally for us, well, we'll go ahead and do the traditional turkey. But have you ever put oysters in the stuffing? And then into the
Oh, I love oyster dressing.
That's good. It's good. Yeah.
Right.
That I do love.
That's very New England. That's my family did that forever. I adore oyster dress stuffing in a turkey. My grandmother went through a period, though, where she began to become very disoriented. It was tragic. And she did things that we didn't realize she was doing. She actually would take the turkey down. They grew up in Boston. They were living in Boston. She would take the turkey to Cape Cod Bay and drown it in the hopes that the oysters would just somehow end up. It was tragic. It was just a disaster. And we tried to say, no, Grandma, remember, we buy the oysters and then we make them with the bread in it. And she would just look at her hands and feel terribly guilty that she had done that. It was a mess. It was just a mess. But oyster stuffing is so incongruous to people who don't live in Maryland or are great chefs like, you know, you, Pamela, or or Gwendolyn, who has experience with that. A lot of people, you say that to somebody in Ohio and they're horrified. they can't conceive of oyster dressing inside a turkey, but it is paradise to me.
Yes, I agree.
It is good, especially if people are using the right herbs to cook the dressing.
Absolutely. Well, Pam, what do you put in your dressing? What do you put in your dressing as far as the herbs? Or Gwen, either one of you two.
Go ahead, Pam.
I use sage and thyme, obviously.
Of course. Yeah.
And I do use very small amounts of fresh rosemary and a very, very small amount of fresh oregano.
Ooh, okay.
Not enough to overpower it, you know, because oregano is very powerful. More so when it's dried. It's really powerful. But just enough just to say, what is that? You know, kind of, that's my thing. It's like somebody sits down and it's like, what's in here? And,
well,
you
it's
know,
like the song, parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme. You know what I mean? It's like the song there.
Yeah.
Parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme. Yeah, exactly.
Right. So that, I mean, that's what I use are the herbs for my dressing. And I'm sorry, I call it dressing, not stuffing, but.
And do you put celery or any of the, do you put any vegetables? Do you mince up any vegetables in there as
celery,
well?
I use celery, I use onion, and I use some carrots.
Yeah.
I use a little carrot. And actually, I use some mushroom, but I use it because a lot of people that I cook for in the holidays and that don't like mushrooms, but this is how I sneak things in, and they probably aren't listening to this radio, so they won't know it. So I will put the mushrooms in a food processor.
Yeah.
So that way they don't see the mushroom. And people say they don't like things, but when you combine it with other things and they say, oh, this is delicious, I say, well, that's what's in it. And they're like, no, I don't like that. Well, you don't like it by itself. But when you marry it with something else, it takes on a whole nother level of flavor.
Yeah, nice. I agree. My grandmother used to put sweet corn in the stuffing. That was the sweet note that would be in the stuffing. Mm-hmm. So there were the herbals and the savories and all the different things. But she would put not a massive amount. But like you, it was these hints of things. It's all whispering. The ingredients are all whispers of stuff. And she would put corn in. Of course, they didn't have, a Cuisinart back then. There were corn kernels mixed in with the stuffing or the whatever, the breading, but the dressing. But it was interesting because that would be the sweet note in it. And it was, she would dial her stuffing from one year to the next, you know. She also believed very strongly in stuffing a turkey, because even though she would do a side dish of dressing as well, she said that the best dressing was the dressing that had been inside the turkey. The turkey juices.
Because all that flavor that you know, even if you grind the turkey and then put something under the skin, and that all just goes right down in that carcass.
Exactly.
And it just flavors that stuffing. So, yeah, it's delicious.
It truly is a cross between sorcery and legerdemain chemistry. I mean, it's literally all the sciences and the mystery sciences mixed. That's why cooking is an art. It's
agreed.
Lots of science, but it also is nuance. It's nuance. It's what the turkey was eating and how the turkey was raised. You know, free-range turkeys are very different than, you know, turkeys that have been manufactured in a factory. It's just different.
Absolutely.
Different.
Well, there's also farm fed turkeys that like butterballs and stuff. I guess that's a massive sort of corporate turkey.
Now, what do you use as your base for your dressing? As far as, do you use a mixture of breads? Do you use what do you use?
Oh,
Pepperidge
I love that
Farm.
Question.
Pepperidge Farm.
Pepperidge Farm.
Yes.
There's nothing wrong with that.
It's absolutely wonderful stuff. You know, it's a mixture of
now,
bread.
Do you use cubed or do you use the crushed
I use the crushed kind because it has different breads.
Right. Yeah. And then they have the cubed one, too, that does it. I do a mixture of white bread and wheat bread, and then I'll use a little bit of cornbread. And I love it, and I don't know why, and it's just so simple. I just take a sleeve of saltine crackers and crush it up in there so fine. Oh, my God, it's delicious.
That's nice. I do a mixture of Ritz crackers and chocolate cake. I like dessert with every course, and so turkey be damned.
There you go. And
chocolate,
there you got that salty sweet kind of thing. There you go.
Exactly.
Savory,
you know,
and
I like
sweet.
Ritz crackers with peanut butter, and I like chocolate with peanut butter. Chocolate cake, Ritz crackers, peanut butter, that's delicious. I give the turkey to everyone else, but I'm eating the stuffing. That's what I do.
There
you
go.
My God.
And actually, I prefer Townhouse over Ritz, but that's just me.
Okay.
Oh, I do like Townhouse, too. That's true.
I have a little trivia thing here. At one time in my life, I was a machinist, torn down machinist, and a man who had his own shop, who I learned a lot from, and I really hold him very dear to my heart. His name was Jim Dolan, an Irishman from, you know, the Wilmington descendant area. When at our little hometown there in Fellowsburg, Maryland, just there on the peninsula, Sybil, we had a little bakery, and it was sold to Pillsbury. And Pillsbury would make the bread, but General Foods in Dover would buy the bread from Pillsbury. But when you get stovetop stuffing, my friend invented the machine that had a rotary blade, but instead of shearing the bread, it was at a negative rake angle, and it would kind of swipe it. And he could adjust that blade in and out to either give you the fine for all the binding aspect, and then back it off so it looks like hand-torn bread.
Oh.
And my friend was the one that invented that machine. I helped him install them there at what was the Pillsbury factory there in Fettlesburg and stuff. So.
Oh, that's fabulous.
Yeah, and of course they made the bread really heavy bread. You know, it wasn't like, you know, Wonder Bread, Lightenary, you know, it was a good, heavy, thick bread. And you just, you know, the loaves would come out of the oven, and they would cool them on a rack, and then it would go down, you know, a conveyor belt and just dump it into these machines that kind of, you know, like a wood chipper almost. But they're only about, you know, 2 feet square, and they would adjust this rotary blade to however, whatever they needed to make that stovetop stuffing. Either real fine, like I said, that's what gave the binding packing aspect, like a snowball, the bigger chunks. So it gave it body. So, anyway, that's my history of culinary
Totally cool.
And stuffing. So, yeah.
I always save the bumpties on a loaf of bread. So if we've got like raisin and nut bread, you know, from Wegmans or whatever we bought, or a ciabatta or whatever bread products we have, I save the bumpties. And because I'm cooking so often now, it's not like they go bad or anything.
Right.
But when I'm doing my turkey meatballs, I will always, whatever I'm making, whether it's a meatball or a meatloaf or whatever, or stuffing a turkey or whatever, I cook so much like a European. Nothing goes to waste. And so, the 12 tablespoons of sauce, tomato sauce from last night or last week, are the beginnings of the next sauce, whatever that sauce is. Nothing ever is thrown out. And the bread is the same thing. So my meatballs, George gets very cranky with me because my meatballs can be dialed this way or that. I don't do any recipe absolutely chemically, mathematically the same from one time to the next.
That's a great idea.
Because if we have like a bunch of bread that's at the end of the loaf and a couple of the bumpties, those, and it happens to have some raisins in it and some walnuts, that's what's put into the food processor, completely pulverized, and that's the base of the meatball. That's the bread that went into that meatball. you know, that week. The next week, if we've got some ciabattas or we've got some white bread, whatever it is, the ingredients are altered this way and that, depending on what the leftovers are. And I just strongly believe in that. And I think it's fascinating. And I love that, Pamela, you and Gwendolyn, all of you, that you mix breads, that you have different, you know, starches that are going into the turkey stuffing or whatever. It's fascinating, you know. It's part of the magic of cooking.
I love it. Because
is someone slicing something
bread
right now? What is that? What is someone slicing carrots
it's
right now?
It's something. Gwen, are you eating?
No, I'm trying to light a match.
Ladies and gentlemen at home, this is one thing that Wayne and Pamela and I have noticed is that Gwendolyn is going through a bit of a pyro thing right now, and she works with highly flammable chemicals and essential oils, but we find out that she's playing with fire. I don't know why. I hope you're not going to burn our studio down, Gwendolyn.
Yeah.
Well, I think she's catching the buzz. I don't know.
Oh, is that what's going on? Oh, brother.
All is forgiven, Glenn. You're allowed to.
Okay.
Oh,
come
that's
on. Y'all,
so
y'all know what
funny
I'm doing. We do have another caller.
Oh, my gosh. Who's our caller?
I don't know. I'm opening the mic right now. Mic is open.
Hello.
Hi,
caller.
Kim,
how
Kim
are you? My God, ladies and gentlemen at home listening, we have our gardener, we have our cook, we have our, Wayne, what are you, a gadabout? And
yeah,
you got our producer.
That's
Kim, Kimberly Young, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm good. We're talking about food and what we do, and Pamela just went through the recipes of the, oh my God.
I've been listening.
Seafaring like Thanksgiving, which is just, oh my God, I would crawl to Port St. Lucie. Or no, where are you, Pamela?
I am in Central Florida.
Central Florida.
Around
I would
the Orlando
crawl there
area
to be. I would crawl there for leftovers, I'm just telling you. Kim, what are you doing for Thanksgiving?
I'm going to my mom's, who is having Thanksgiving with friends, and they're doing non-traditional, but that's fine with me. So that's what
is she a great cook?
So that's what we're going to do. No. She makes something well. And what she's bringing to this, she makes very well. She makes a yummy from scratch pumpkin roll. But my mom makes stuffing that of gagia.
Oh no! Oh no!
Oh dear! But my mother-in-law, who no longer is actually my mother-in-law, but I still claim her, made the best stuffing, and that's whose recipe I use. I mean, it's obviously a loose recipe, like everybody's dressing recipe stuffing, but and she puts a little like diced apple in hers, and celery and onion and lots of butter.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
wonderful.
So, yeah,
that was the one ingredient that I didn't hear you guys talking about was she does put a little bit of apple in it, very finely diced. You don't know it's in there, but I think it just kind of adds some moisture and a little bit of sweet. Maybe.
That's a very New England thing to do, too, is to put apples in. Can I ask you a question? I missed it because my phone went out a little bit with reception. Who's cooking? What is that?
That is
I'm sorry.
Me.
That would be me. I'm sorry. My bad.
What are you doing?
I'm raiding the refrigerator because all this talk of food has made me into the munchies, and I'm not even stoned.
Oh, my God. All right, anyway, back to Kim. Kim, I miss, is your mother going to cook, or are
no,
other people
going to
provide
going
the meal,
to
and it's
friends.
Going to be delicious?
Yeah, and she's bringing pumpkin roll, which is she makes very well. But I was saying, I don't know if your phone was cutting out, that when she does make dressing, it's cornbread dressing that's so dry it would gag you. It's so bad. But,
wow.
You know.
Now, is it a potluck? Are you bringing something there? How many people are going to be there?
I'm just a small small group. I'm going to bring some wine. I actually cannot remember what's on the – it's just non-traditional. I just remember it's non-traditional. I don't remember what was on the menu. She sent it to me, and I forget. It doesn't really matter to me. I'm just with my mom, my 80-year-old mom. So, you know.
So your mother is not as gifted in the kitchen as you are in the garden.
No.
God.
She's gifted to other things.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice. And you know what?
She cooks some things just fine, but yeah, she doesn't really enjoy cooking. She's adequate.
Yeah. Hey, Kim, yeah. I just here's something to share with you real quick. There's a, in the neighborhood where my daughter lives, right on the bay, there was somebody there who was a beekeeper. And she bottled up her little jars of honey. My daughter
wonderful.
Bought one for herself and one for me. And
how nice.
The straight from the hive, not homogenized, not, you know, whatever, honey. It's so delicious. And I know about your honeybees. That's why I wanted to bring that up, share that with you.
Well, thank you. Yes, I don't have honeybees, but I do have bees. So but thank you. That's exciting. But
right, you have
honey.
You have the wonderful little bees that you have the cardboard little hivette things
little
that are
yeah,
yeah
mm-hmm.
which
mm-hmm.
are good because the bees then go out and pollinate things, but they're not producers of honey. No, that's it's wonderful.
Correct.
What happens to them in the winter?
Mm-hmm.
By the way, what happens to those in the winter? Do they hibernate? What do they do?
They die. They just live 6 or 8 weeks, and their whole purpose in life is to lay eggs and carry on the next generation.
But the eggs then winter okay? Is that what they do, or
mm-hmm.
how does that work?
Yes. Yep. They lay a little. They have a little pollen ball that they lay inside with the egg, and it goes through a metamorphosis from the time it's laid until spring when it emerges. But that's what its food source is that little pollen ball.
But it literally that those
in there.
But that egg hibernates through months of winter. It survives. Through months
mm-hmm,
of winter,
mm-hmm.
is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you have a brutal winter where you are.
And,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
but you
yep.
have a brutal winter there in Kansas. It's not like, you know, people at home aren't hearing that you're living in Florida where it would be pretty much mild. It's really astounding that they survive, you know, that little.
And they do. And the ones that I have, we harvest them and put them in a storage shed or a garage or something to kind of increase
nice.
Their chances. But they do. I mean, not as large a percentage, but they do winter, you know, if you weren't to do any with no human intervention,
yeah.
obviously.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Well, that's fabulous.
Yeah,
that's fabulous.
But I was listening last week and heard all of the seafood on the menu for, I think it's Pamela's Thanksgiving. I was like, good grief, I want to go there.
Oh, weren't you? Were you screeching with laughter when we were talking about that it was literally like sex talk? It was the most delicious.
It was food porn stuff. I'm telling you, I remember there was lobster and there was stuffed crab and there was vodka. I don't remember all of it, but I was doing laundry listening.
You know, it's actually interesting when you hear it, when you hear Pamela describe it, because there's been talk, you know, that the pilgrims, when they hit Cape Cod and when they came into Massachusetts, you literally dropped your net into the water and you pulled it up. And it's the same with the Chesapeake Bay. There was such abundance of fish and
yeah.
shellfish and everything that, I mean, they couldn't believe it. They were coming from Europe and where, you know, things were not necessarily as prosperous. And they came to the shores of the New World and they literally were inundated with food. And it makes there have been people who've said that the whole myth of turkey and everything for the first Thanksgiving, that is a myth. It was actually seafood. They were eating like, you know, fish and cod, you know, hence Cape Cod. I mean, they just could eat whatever they wanted because it was all so abundant in that water, that cold water. So I think Pamela's hit on the right Thanksgiving dinner.
Right, because yeah,
but I don't think she could afford to feed all of us, unfortunately.
They did. I mean, besides cod and bass and any kind of, I mean, think of when you're the year that it was, you know, how long ago. I mean, they didn't have like, you know, they had wildfowl running around, and they had you know, deer running. I'm sure there was deer on the Thanksgiving table. And
completely.
You know, it just, it wasn't like, you know, a beautiful, you know, butter braised turkey, you know, it was, it was just, you know, whatever was around in that area. And you're right. There was a lot of seafood at the first Thanksgiving because that's what was around. That was what they could find.
Absolutely. And no pollution. And no pollution and no abuse of the environment by the Native Americans. They weren't overfishing. They weren't overhunting. They didn't take anything more than what they needed. They were, they had so much common sense, you know, unlike what we have become. You know, there was no hunting for fun. People didn't kill animals and think it was fun as and a joke, you know, and then leave carcasses around like the Trump children. I mean, this is, you know, it's like they hunted, they took what they needed and stopped. And, yeah, it's just amazing what the abundance
well,
that they would have had.
And this is at this time of the year, if you're still stepping into the shallows and stuff, they would be able to find the shellfish, you know, pretty easily.
Absolutely. When John Smith, you know, famous John Smith of, you know, Sacagawea and all that, he was the one that they kept, once they landed in Virginia, then they came up the Chesapeake Bay for new settlements, and one was right across the, on Kent Island, right across from Annapolis here, was one of their early settlements. But they said that when the English came here, that you could walk out every bit of 100 yards off of the shorelines of the bay and never touch the bottom because you were walking on oyster shell beds.
Yeah.
Oyster beds. They were that plentiful.
By the way,
and
it was
course,
Pocahontas. It was
thank you. Well, thank you. You're
it's
right.
It's interesting. I worked with a burlesque queen years ago who was a Native American. Her name was Poke My Hontas, but that's another story for another time.
That's another story.
Anyway.
Yeah.
But when I did a Shakespeare festival in St. Mary's City in Maryland, which was the original capital of Maryland, it
absolutely,
wasn't Baltimore.
Absolutely, yes.
St. Mary's City, we had a natural, I went down there for a summer, and they had a natural outdoor theater amphitheater that was built there as part of the restoration project of St. Mary's City. So the state of Maryland was excavating the original St. Mary's and finding, you know, architecture and finding antiquities and all that. They were doing all of this extraordinary thing back in 1981. And I went down there and we did a Shakespeare festival and comedies and all of this. And what was wonderful was that in this natural hillside, the state of Maryland had built an outdoor theater. And it was an outdoor natural amphitheater. And the stage was at the bottom of the hill and was raised up, and it was all these platforms and levels that they could build set pieces on. And what was intriguing about it was this. The back of the stage was the Chesapeake Bay. So in other words, at high tide, you, if you had to cross from one side of the stage to the other without being seen, you walked under the stage because it was all so high up. It was like at its highest point, it was 12 feet high. So you didn't want to fall off the back of the stage because you could break your leg. In low tide, you would land on the ground.
Uh-huh.
At high tide, especially during a full moon, the waves could be lapping at the base of the pilot.
So you had
to be very careful when you were walking from one side of the stage to the other underneath if you didn't want to be seen, because you'd be walking maybe in water. But the punchline to the story is this, apropos of abundance. When I got down there, there was already maybe 10 people in the company who'd gotten there early. So the company was about 30 people in total with, you know, stagehands and actors and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And they welcomed me and the other actors that had gone down there with a soft shell crab dinner. So we got down there and we took the train, and then I can't remember where we got off. You know, maybe we got off at D.C. and then we drove there. I'm not sure. But this was the killer. We got down there. The car dropped us off. We were put into our housing. And they had soft shell crabs all going for us. And they were preparing this banquet. And so we were at the outdoor theater area where they had prepared this picnic for us before we got to meet the company, sort of meeting with the directors and all the things. And a person who was there, who was a friend of mine, said, "You're not going to believe this." And we walked like about 50 yards away from the picnic area to the stage. And he said, "Look, this is our stage and this is what we're going to be doing. And, and this is the path to the dressing rooms and all of this. This is where the company, the audience sits." And he said, "Come behind the stage." So we went there and he had brought a little paper bag with him. And what he did was we walked down behind the stage and we walked down to where the water was coming up and was lapping at the ground. And he pulled out of the bag slices of hot dog, string, and a fish hook.
Right.
And he put a slice of hot dog on the fish hook. And he threw the hook attached to the string out into the water about 8 feet, 6 feet. And the water was very shallow. It was very shallow there. It wasn't like there was a drop off. It was just like marsh. This was just marsh behind it. So at high tide, it was, you know, the water was there. But, I mean, you could wade out there for like 30 feet and still be below your knees. I mean, it was the walk below your knees. And he pulled it in and crabs were walking. He was leading the crabs out of the water with the hot dog. They were running after the hot dog and literally coming, and it was only, he felt so bad. It was like what was the thing in Through the Looking Glass, the carpenter and the walrus and the carpenter, where they had tricked the oysters into joining them. The poor crabs were so in love with that hot dog slice that they were fighting over the hot dog slice. They were fighting each other and were not noticing that they were walking out of the water. Their heads had broken the surface of the water, and they were literally walking up on land. And it was like I was looking shocked. And, of course, once it got too far up, they stopped and they scurried back. And of course, crabs have good eyesight. So when they saw these, two equity members, you know, actors, equity starving actors, you know, they figured, "Hey, let's get out of here." These two are like, so they ran back into the water. But Lou, my friend, said that they would go down every day with nets, with the little butterfly nets, whatever, and they would simply lead the crabs ashore and then net them. Just bring the net down and bring out a basket. Each net would have four or five crabs in it. It was like, oh, my God, my God. And they were big, and they were, magical, magical. I just couldn't bring myself to cook them. I can't throw things into boiling water. I just, I did that with my first husband, but I just won't do it with anything else.
Yeah, you want them screaming and kicking when you throw them in the pot. I'm just saying that right now.
Yeah.
If they ain't moving, you don't need them. Yeah, so.
Douse them with wine.
Do you guys like soft shell crabs? I have trouble eating them because I don't like the shells. I like crab, but I don't like that. It feels like I'm eating fingernails.
It's like a pork cracklin or a pork. It's a fine skin, really. It's a really fine skin. It hasn't turned into shell yet. It's really more of a skin. Absolutely, I love soft shell crabs.
I do too.
Quite a delicacy.
I do too. I like them very much. I've had them several times up in the area, and where else? God, someplace else that wasn't just in that area, but that's where they came from. And then the little cherry clams.
The cherry stone clams. They're little neck, also referred to as little neck clams.
You know, one of my favorite hints that I got from my grandmother years ago was whatever shellfish, oysters or clams or mussels, any shellfish like that, you always let them sit in water with cornmeal for several hours so that they flush themselves clean. There's nothing worse than getting a dirty clam or a dirty, scallops that are rather mussels that are dirty.
So
but
true.
It flushes
so
them
true.
Through. And it makes them, it not only cleans them, but it also makes them so sweet when you cook them. They have a heightened sweetness to them that's lovely. You know,
cornmeal I haven't done before, but we just throw them in a little like Pyrex sticks, sitting them in water and stuff, and then just throw them in a microwave, and then they open up and you eat them straight from there. So,
right,
wait a minute,
but
you
clean
them in the
first.
Microwave.
Yeah,
what do you put in the microwave?
The clams.
Oh my God! Never in my life.
that's bad, man.
I have to tell you, I got a text from a friend of mine who's about nuttier than squirrel turds, and he texted me the other day and said, "How long? I have a 26-pound turkey. How long do you cook it in the microwave?"
It's funny.
He said it's been in there for 6 hours and it's not doing anything. I said, you can just, do it overnight. It's going to have to 26 hours, do it overnight. Not thinking he was actually putting a 20-pound turkey in the microwave. And that son of a bitch blew up the turkey and sent me a picture of his microwave that was completely black.
Yeah.
Wow. I can't believe he has a microwave oven that's big enough to hold a turkey that large.
Yeah. That's odd.
Me neither.
I can remember.
I saw the microwave and the blown up turkey, and it was just black. I'm like, I said, he's nuttier than squirrel turds. I'm just like.
That's
amazing.
I can
remember early 60s of What's My Line? And, there was, I can picture them. I can't think of any of the names. Alan Funk. But anyway, all the regular contestants on What's My Line. And the secret
was it Bennett Cerf?
I'm sorry, you lost me there. But anyway, the guy who was the contestant, What's My Line, he invented, and they were calling it the radar range. I'm doing air quotes there.
Yeah.
And
they did a turkey during that period of the show. And Beth Meyerson was one of the women on the show, the contestants, or one of the panelists. And at the end of the show, they pulled the thing out and they, carved it up. And, this is good. It doesn't have the crispness that you would get from the oven, but it's good and hot and good. It's cooked and stuff. And, yada, yada, yada. But that was, this is early 1960s, right?
Yeah.
That they were talking about. But it was the radar range.
Yes, I remember that. I remember that exactly. And, of course, back then they were used to TV dinners, so even something like that was considered to be a miracle. But, let's be honest, brining turkeys has only come about in the last, 10 years, with Cooking Channel and the Food Network and everything.
Uh-huh.
People didn't used to brine their turkeys. That was a secret that, people maybe would do because it had been passed down from family member to family member, but it wasn't wide. That wasn't in the Campbell Soup cookbook or the Betty Crocker cookbook of brining a turkey. You bought a turkey, you got it home from Kresge's, and you baked it, and if it was dry, that's the way most people had their, cuisine has changed so much in this country over the last, 10, 15 years. It's really amazing. Kim, you being stranded, since we're all ocean people here, you being stranded in the Midwest, do you ache for seafood? I lived in Ohio for many years, and lobster was a rarity and was exotic and magical and was special occasion. I was born in New England and lived in Boston and Massachusetts, but when my family moved to Ohio, the exoticness of clams and oysters and seafood and everything, that was not on everyone's dinner table. Do you ache for that, or has the world changed so much that you have that all the time?
Oh, no, that's very special, special occasion. Because if you don't, pay to go somewhere really nice, then it's not very good, where I live. So it's special occasion food, seafood is, for sure.
And you don't prepare that kind of food on a regular basis?
No. Our family tradition since I was a little girl was to have seafood on Christmas Eve. And that was, I'm not really sure how that started, but that was something that was started back when I was, well, I think when my mom was a little girl, actually. And that's just been a tradition we've carried out always.
Uh-huh. So you don't do grilled salmon or you don't even do like grilled salmon or anything like that usually?
I do salmon and I do what's the trout that has the pink meat? Can't think of what kind of trout that is. I get that sometimes that I special order and I'll make that. But yeah, other than that, I don't really buy stuff here at the local grocery store.
Uh-huh.
To prepare.
I love
that often.
Love trout. I just love trout.
Yeah, trout's very good. Mountain stream trout.
That would be the rainbow trout.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With the pink meat, the rainbow trout.
I am really, I love fish. And I mean, I just love fish of all kinds. So I order it. And I'm so grateful that, you know, now that we live on the East Coast, I mean, granted, we live in outside of Philadelphia now. But restaurants here offer so many different fish dishes that when we go out, I try always to go towards fish because it's just, I love the way it tastes. I love any kind
of it. Do you like
it, so.
Monkfish?
Oh, yeah. Sort of. Monkfish is
monkfish
not one of my favorites,
like
and I don't know why.
Monkfish tastes just like lobster.
If you cook it right. If you prepare it right, if you don't, it can be like a bad grouper.
Oh, yeah, no.
Yeah. That's
and I don't
Gwendolyn, that is so, Gwendolyn, that is absolutely spot on. That's exactly what it is. It's like a bad grouper.
If it's not prepared right. But see, the monkfish is kind of rare, so it doesn't get prepared correctly or timely, I think, and that's what happens. But I don't do grouper myself. It smells bad when you cook it.
Yeah.
It makes your house smell like old fishwife.
Oh, my God. Well, that was appetizing. Judas Priest, what the hell was that?
It's
why didn't you
terrible.
Just say it smells like an old poo-poo undie? I mean, I don't eat bass anymore only because it's just not correct. I feel guilty about it because it's an endangered species, and
yeah.
It's just I feel guilty about it. I won't do that.
Do you eat rockfish or what we call rockfish, striped bass?
I haven't.
Bass.
Uh-huh.
Oh, see, that's here in the bay. Well, this is where they spawn.
I never
okay?
have.
Striped bass, but, you know, we also, it's kind of a slang name for it, is rockfish, R-O-C-K. And
yeah.
He's a
nice yes.
rock, he's an alpha fish, so, you know, the meat is very white, very light, and that's pretty good, too. Now, I'm not talking about, you know, bass in the pond, right? I'm talking
right.
about the ocean bass that migrates
yeah.
from New England on down and spawns in the Chesapeake Bay and then on back up. You know, that's its migration route, right? And that is quite a delicacy of rockfish fillet. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah, you get a chance. Look out for it and give it a chance. You know, a little lemon and butter, you're good.
But first of all, lemon and butter with anything is great. I mean, a styrofoam coffee cup with lemon and butter is wonderful. But that's another story for another time. I'm looking at the time, and speaking of time, we are running out of time. I am so thrilled that you all called in. Kim,
oh,
I'm thrilled you called in tonight. It's always good hearing from you, even on seasons when there is no gardening to talk about. It's always good to hear from you. Pamela, again, once my pants tore, I got completely naked and just have been sitting here masturbating during all of your food discussions. If I can't eat it, at least I can have sex about it. And that's
there
always
you go.
Good. Wayne, thank you,
yes.
thank you for being a regular panelist. Kim, I can't urge you enough, and Pamela, we should just make this What's My Line. You people should call in every week, and we'll simply talk about whatever you feel like talking about. And, of course, all of us, I know, thank our own Gwendolyn. Gwendolyn, thank you so much for yet another year of joy on Blog Talk Radio with the Herbie Monsters Network. Thank you so much.
It's truly a pleasure.
You've been listening at home to you've been listening to Come Now, Don't Sulk here as part of the Herbie Monsters studio on Blog Talk Radio. We're here every Monday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 7 Central, or your time zone corresponding. And we will be here again next week. We wish all of you a joyous and happy and peaceful and contentment-filled Thanksgiving. There is so much to be thankful for. And as I close all my tourettes every week, I say be grateful, be present, be mindful, be grateful. Everything you're seeing right now and smelling and tasting is borrowed. Have a wonderful evening. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.